Welcome to Real Time Real Talk, a Dexcom podcast dedicated to pharmacists and other healthcare professionals on the front lines helping people thrive who live with diabetes.
You've got all this other additional information. For example, overnight, that I'll see kind of a rise in glucose that I wouldn't have gotten with the 4 to 6 finger sticks, or, you know, the different meal composition or how exercise later on in the day, and that's marked on the CGM. You know, I've got those 4 finger sticks, but I've still got all of this additional information that really paints a much bigger picture.
Dexcom is the leading developer of real-time, continuous glucose monitoring.
I have been waiting for this G7 for a long time, and I'm just so excited. It's really going to change diabetes and pregnancy.
For more information on all Dexcom technologies, please visit Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Real Time Real Talk. And welcome, if this is your first time here joining us, I'm Cher Pastore, and I'm the host of Real Time Real Talk. In today's episode, we are going to be discussing the use of continuous glucose monitoring for individuals with diabetes during pregnancy. And we're really going to be talking about some kind of tips and tricks, and our guest speaker is going to share her best practices of how she uses continuous glucose monitoring in her practice. So my guest today is Dr. Kristen Castorino. She is a senior research physician at the Sansum Diabetes Research Institute. Now, she specializes in diabetes research, specifically in pregnancy, and she has over 12 years of experience in this area. And she also does a lot of research on the accuracy studies and accuracy studies during pregnancy specifically. Hi, Kristen. Welcome.
Hi there. It's so wonderful to be here.
Yes, I'm so excited. So let's just get right into our episode. Can you just give our listeners a little bit of background about yourself and, you know, maybe your experience in your practice?
Yeah, absolutely. So as Cher mentioned, I've been working in the device accuracy space for over 12 years. I think it's getting close to 15 now, and have really gotten to see the evolution of CGM from where it was to where it is now. And it's just incredible. And I think that the most important hallmarks of where we are today is incredible accuracy, ease of use, and then the clarity and the interface for people just make it really simple to integrate in your daily life. And in my clinical practice, I get to see mainly pregnant women with diabetes. And I see both women who are well-insured, average socioeconomic status, to those who are the poorest of the poor, who really struggle with, you know, have food insecurity, housing insecurity. And I get to use CGM in all of these populations during pregnancy. And so I really get to experience all the different ways the technology is utilized across people's backgrounds and socioeconomic status.
Great. That's such good news. And so I want to talk about, first, let's talk about what some of the differences are in terms of managing diabetes when someone is pregnant and not. So what are some of the key differences?
So some of the key differences, when you become pregnant, your target glucose is much narrower. And that's probably the biggest, most important thing to know, is that we go from a target of 70 to 180 to targets 63 to 140 if you're pregnant. And the system is set up for the non-pregnant targets. And so it's important that providers and patients alike all know to make those changes to the pregnancy settings, or at least are aware of those, that that is the target. We're really in pregnancy striving for normal blood sugars as much as we can. And the reason why we're doing that, and this is another hallmark for pregnancy, is that we're taking care of two beings, both mom and baby. And the reason for the really strict glucose targets is that we know that if baby's exposed to higher glucose levels, it makes baby higher risk for complications and mom as well.
Just maybe mention what some of those complications may be. The biggest one, I think, is macrosomia, right? But there are some others. Do you want to maybe talk just a few about some of these things that could possibly happen if the glucose is not as well controlled as we would like?
This is oftentimes a hard conversation for moms. When they get diagnosed with GDM, you know, their biggest fear is what's going to happen to baby. And so I think about complications as divided into short and long-term complications. And then for the short-term complications, I think about their increased risk if you have high blood sugars at the time of fetal formation. So in that first trimester, if there are high glucose levels, there's a much higher risk of having a fetal malformation or a birth defect. So it's really important to have normal glucose levels in early pregnancy. And then as the pregnancy progresses, you have higher risk of having other maternal and fetal complications, such as, you know, the absolute worst is stillbirth is possible, particularly if you have a lot of glucose variability or glucose going really high and then low and then high. And other complications are risk of having a traumatic delivery, needing to have a C-section because baby is too big. Baby has higher risk of having low glucose at delivery. And in addition, baby has increased risk of having jaundice, some metabolic disturbances that can put baby in the neonatal ICU, which is, of course, devastating to mom and family. And then mom has a higher risk of other, when mom has elevated glucose levels in pregnancy, she's at risk for other complications in pregnancy, including preeclampsia, eclampsia, hypertension, or other metabolic disorders. And so it can make the pregnancy overall more complicated. And then when we think about long-term complications, a baby who is exposed to high glucose in utero is basically set up for an abnormal metabolic blueprint. And so they're predisposed to having type 2 diabetes or obesity later on in life, usually adolescence into adulthood. And so we're struggling with this, you know, obesity and diabetes begetting obesity. And if we can normalize glucose, we can reduce this risk.
Wow. Sounds like, first of all, it's such a critical time and so many things could happen. I'm so happy that we have a tool here that could help our pregnant moms and babies during this time. Now, what I want you to tell our listeners a little bit about is what are some of the differences from, like, say, type 1 diabetes versus gestational diabetes using a continuous glucose monitoring? So would there be maybe different alerts? Would there be definitely not different targets? But what are some of the differences when you manage someone with type 1 versus gestational diabetes?
That's a really great question. And it's an important one because we really should think of them as different populations with different risks. When we have type 1 diabetes, there's risk of having a low glucose or having a really high glucose, such as, like, if there's a pump issue and there's a suspension in insulin. And so there can be some life-threatening lows and highs that really need to be identified. And in gestational diabetes, we're not as concerned about those. We usually don't see those high highs. And gestational diabetes, in many cases, it's managed with diet and exercise, and we're not concerned about lows at all. So in gestational diabetes, I particularly if they're not on insulin, I really like to turn the low alerts off and really focus on postprandial response to glucose, and then how can we make that better? How can we turn eating a breakfast of a bagel and cream cheese that spikes glucose up high to something that's more of a complex carbohydrate with more, you know, some more vegetables. And then mom gets to see the difference in real time and make real significant behavior changes to help improve overall glucose levels.
Can you tell us, give us maybe, you know, have you introduced someone to Dexcom G7 or did they come to you and ask? Tell us a little bit about how it happens. Are individuals at all resistant to wearing the continuous Dexcom G7? Just give us some studies.
Yeah, I've got so many examples. So let's jump into a couple. You know, I've had patients hear about it or see a commercial or something like that and just hit the door asking for it. I have patients who are like, I really don't want to do finger sticks. I don't have time. and what else is there? And then I've had patients who are, this technology is totally new to them. For example, I had a woman with type 2 diabetes, and she was had early in pregnancy. I think she was about 7 weeks pregnant. Her A1C when she first showed up was, I think, around 9 point something. It was a surprise, unplanned pregnancy. And in addition, she happens to work as a bus driver. So we have a woman who has uncontrolled diabetes, is now needing to get into the diabetes pregnancy targets, use insulin, really fine-tune the insulin management, and in addition, drive a bus safely. And so it was really wonderful to see her, see this tool to help optimize her glucose levels. It was new to her, but we figured it out. She's Spanish speaking, so we set it all up in Spanish. And, you know, we were able to customize the alerts that were just right for her. We're slowly, week by week, improving her control.
So tell me a little bit more about how using a continuous glucose monitor would help the healthcare provider. And then I want to go back to how it helps the patient for sure. But you know, it helps in different ways. So tell us, how would it help the provider, right? To maybe titrate insulin, to start insulin sooner if insulin is necessary in either type 2 or gestational. Talk to us about that.
So the two ways it really helps the provider are helping the provider with diet and lifestyle management, as well as insulin dosing so that it's perfectly improving the glucose areas where it needs to and not over-insulinizing and causing some lows. So that's one big area. But another area is that it's so much more information. We're going from, you know, where the standard of care was getting 4 glucose points a day, if you're lucky, and hopefully getting the logs, to having abundant information of what's happening overnight, what's happening in the morning before the first meal of the day, what's happening after breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and then the snacks that who's testing. We finally can get some information consistently around what's happening in snacks, activity. It's like, you know, turning on the lights and finally being able to see what's really going on. And so for providers, as they're, you know, struggling with, we're trying to get, you know, really optimized glucose control. Well, it's really hard to do if you don't have the information of what's really happening.
I know. So I remember when I would see patients with gestational diabetes in particular, you know, they had to, for sure, I asked them to check glucose minimum of 6 times a day, right? So it's fasting, it's pre-breakfast, post-breakfast, pre-lunch, post-lunch. And then I would say, okay, 1 hour after eating. And then they'd say, well, okay, but do I start from when I stopped eating or started eating? So it's really, it's hard, it's confusing. And that's a lot if we even got the 6 finger sticks a day. So I think it can just help in so many ways, and also could help hopefully find like the peak postprandial spike, right? As you kind of mentioned. So how would that look? Like, would it matter if they went up and then came down quickly? Like, how would it manifest in practice once we had some of that information?
It's such a great and funny point, because I have so many patients, they're like, well, when is the best time to do that 1 hour after finger stick? And how, you know, and I'm like, well, if you really want the real long answer, it really depends on what you eat. Because if you have a meal that's more simple carb, doesn't have a lot of protein or healthy fats, then you're really going to spike around 30 minutes, 40 minutes after eating. And a finger stick would miss that peak completely. On the flip side, you could have more of a high-fat, higher-protein meal with some complex carbs, and the spike may not be until 2 hours after, and you're missing that information as well. And so it's really hard to get, I mean, the purpose of that postprandial testing is to try and find the peak and then reduce it, and it really depends on timing. And ideally, meals are different, and they're complex, and life can be complex, and so what you're going to eat is not necessarily the same each day. And so the perfect time to do that postprandial check is really variable. And so it's just so much more information to be able to use CGM to really look at the whole picture of what is the postprandial excursion, or what is that mountain. Hopefully it's not a mountain. Hopefully it's not like the Alps. It's more like a rolling hill after eating.
Yeah, I mean, and I think the most crucial thing, well, there are two points that I just want to reiterate. One is for sure. Let's say if somebody had a Coca-Cola, they would probably spike pretty quickly, right? Like maybe 30 minutes. And then if they had, say, fettuccine Alfredo, it could be 3 hours. So there's no way we would really get the information we were trying to get if the person wasn't wearing a continuous glucose monitor. And then I think the second point is that everybody is so individual, right? How their body responds. And that's why it's so crucial. And so I think what I want to know about is, have you had patients that would wear a continuous glucose monitor and then come to you and say, oh, wow, I didn't know that that happened when I ate X? Like, have you had a lot of those stories and they're learning themselves as opposed to you saying, you know, I think a bagel's not the best choice, please have something else, but they're coming to you and saying that?
Yes, every day I have that, and it's really wonderful. And I think it's almost better that way if it's patient led, because they're, you know, pregnancy is also a time where patients are so motivated. And so it's just a time where people are really open to looking at taking a deep dive into behaviors and habits. And also there's not a lot of, you know, nutrition education prior to for most people. And so people of all backgrounds have so many aha moments of, oh, this doesn't work. And I was really surprised that it didn't work, and making changes.
And, you know, you mentioned before there's just so much data. Have there been any challenges with either like the person having too much information, or do they not really say that? And if they do, are you just maybe advise them, okay, well, don't worry about all that. Just look at, you know, certain things. How does that go?
I think a couple different parts of that, or two different aspects to how I would answer that question. One is if it's a woman that has pre-existing diabetes, so for example, type 2, I found that there is a lot of shame that comes up when seeing all this information and seeing the high numbers and like, oh my God, I'm going to 200. And so we try and, you know, make slower, you know, they're different, really individualized basis to how do we get to goal in each woman. But that can be hard.
Yeah. Let's talk about, you know, either misconceptions or if not about like what all this data is doing. Is it overwhelming to the patient? Is it overwhelming to the provider? And then I want to talk about hopefully get us into, you know, the AGP and things like that, like how we could help others who might not know about how to do clarity, like how can we help them look at the data?
Right. So another area that I think CGM can be a little bit rocky on takeoff when it's first initiated is when, particularly in GDM, I found that doing finger sticks isn't as helpful because it can be confusing, and I'm sticking to just CGM because it provides so much more information. I'm not concerned about hypoglycemia. And they're not trying to compare apples to oranges with a finger stick blood glucose to a CGM glucose, because it really is an apples to oranges comparison. There's a lot of different things going on, and that can be confusing. For those who, if they're still using finger stick, there needs to be a conversation of we're measuring different things and how the number is not going to be exactly the same. And that's normal and doesn't mean the CGM has an issue. And just really reassure them how to understand both those pieces.
Okay. Yeah. What about some providers? If they aren't very well versed in data interpretation, CGM data interpretation yet, whether they just, you know, haven't used so much of it in their practice, or actually they could be hesitant to use it because they're like, what do I do with all this information? What are like the three top tips, say, for looking at an AGP report? What could we tell some of our listeners out there? You know, listen, CGM can be so helpful to you. Don't worry about this data interpretation. It's pretty easy. I do 1, 2, 3. What are those things?
Patient comes in, and as I'm evaluating their CGM data, my top three things that I look at are, one, double checking, are we in the pregnancy targets? Because I sometimes have, you know, we forget to switch it to the pregnancy targets. Once we're there, then I look at what is their time and range in that 63 to 140, and is it at least greater than 70%, ideally greater than 90% in GDM and type 2. Then I look at average glucose, and looking at where is it at now. I'm looking forward to more guidelines that help drive average glucose. But for now, my ballpark is if I've got great time and range, then I'm looking to lower the average glucose if I can do so safely. And then I look at hypoglycemia if it's a risk factor. And then the last thing I do is look at learning moments. And it's nice because the AGP can have all this information on one page. It's easy to send the AGP report to other care providers, and it's a really one-stop shop. And then if there's a situation where you need to go into a deep dive, then I might look at the daily view and talk about what happened here and what was going on and what did you eat and all of that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a dietitian by training, so that was probably my favorite part. You know, they would come in and we'd talk about what they ate and see what their glucose response was. But now on the G7, Dexcom G7, right in the app, G7 app, you can quickly add, the person can quickly add, oh, I ate this, or I took medicine here, or I did exercise. So it's pretty exciting. And that would really streamline that whole conversation for us. Do you think there are any misconceptions around using CGM during pregnancy?
You know, from a provider standpoint, I think there's a misconception. I think the guidelines are just lagging behind, and experts' opinion across different backgrounds, MFM and endocrinology, are all agreeing this is an incredible tool that can really help us finally get to better glucose control in pregnancy. And then for the patients, I think new technology can be a little bit scary. And so sometimes there's a misconception of it's just new and they want to do everything right and they want to err on the side of caution. And so being able to be comfortable and confident with technology as providers really helps put our patients at ease.
What do you think about, because I remember right when we started using CGM in type 2 and gestational, because I remember, you know, if someone had type 1, they likely already would have been on a CGM. What could you say when maybe some of the providers are like, well, my patient still has to do a finger stick anyway, or, oh, this might not be so accurate. What do you say to that?
You know, I think a lot of that information is old, like in terms of accuracy. CGM technology has... and accuracy has just exponentially grown. And so more than likely they're citing potentially old accuracy information, or they just don't know. In addition, the most blood glucose monitors aren't very accurate as well. And that's also not widely understood, particularly, you know, the ones that my patients get coverage for based on their insurance, or if they don't have insurance, are some of the worst meters on the market. And, you know, factoring that in as well.
Yeah. And not just that, right. I mean, even if the person is, if they follow the ACOG guidelines, which are 4 finger sticks per day, even if the provider wants to say that, okay, but you could just use CGM in addition, right? Because then you would have so much more information. So they don't necessarily
have to be
separate. They could still go together if so, and unless, you know, and until the guidelines change, and then say the provider, you know, feels maybe more comfortable with CGM, they could just do both if they wanted to.
Exactly. That works really well. And, you know, you've got that finger stick that is guideline based, and then you've got all this other additional information looking at, I've started to see, like, for example, overnight that I'll see kind of a rise in glucose that I wouldn't have gotten with the 4 to 6 finger sticks, or, you know, the different meal composition or how exercise later on in the day. And that's marked on the CGM that I'm, you know, I've got those 4 finger sticks, but I've still got all of this additional information that really paints a much bigger picture.
Right. So we're going to wrap up soon. So right while I tell our listeners a few things, try to think about your top 3 tips that you want to tell our listeners for using Dexcom G7 in pregnancy complicated by diabetes. Now, I just want to make sure that I tell our listeners a couple of things. Number one, we have recently published the G7 accuracy paper that Dr. Castorvino was a part of. So we will be linking that in our show notes. So what's the title of that, Kristen? Dexcom G7, do you remember? While you're looking that up, I'll tell them some other things. So again, G7 is warned for 10 days. It's worn on the back of the upper arm. And the G7 accuracy paper was published a couple weeks ago. And what is the title? Do you have it there?
Yeah, the title is Performance of the Dexcom G7 CGM System in Pregnant Women with Diabetes.
Excellent. Right. Because we talked a lot about accuracy. So I want everyone to be able to have that paper, have access to that paper, so they know what we're talking about and they can feel comfortable that the G7 is accurate during this time. And I wanted to also tell them every time we talk about our target ranges, 63 to 140, we're always talking about milligrams per deciliter. And I just remember using, you know, continuous glucose monitoring with my patients that had type 1, and it was just such a big help for everything. I mean, helping me get them to target without having so much hypoglycemia, helping learn what they ate. Just, it was so great. So can you tell us your top 3 tips for using CGM in pregnancy and anything else you want to share with our listeners that we didn't cover today?
My top 3 tips are particularly for integrating it into your practice are, number 1, try it yourself. If you've gotten the chance to utilize a sample, it makes a world of difference in terms of really understanding it and being able to make recommendations for your patients. Number 2, I really like to initiate in the clinic and put the sensor on right then and there. The times that I have prescribed and they pick it up in the pharmacy, a lot of times they don't place it. And there's various, you know, they're nervous or whatever, but there's so much that can be done in a short time. And so we have our medical assistants place the sensor in the clinic. And then the third is remember those pregnancy targets of 63 to 140.
Great. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, that brings me also to coverage. Just if you're a provider and you're not sure if it's covered, we do have a lot of resources out there. We have a PACE tool, which helps determine quickly and easily, is this going to go through DME? Is it covered at pharmacy? So at Dexcom, we have a lot of resources and tools for you to help that. But also, even if not, I would say just write the prescription, send it into pharmacy, and then the rest we can take care of on the back end. And Kristen, I want to thank you so much for doing this episode with me today.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's an absolute pleasure. I have been waiting for this G7 for a long time, and I'm just so excited. It's really going to change diabetes and pregnancy.
Excellent. And so if you are out there listening to us today, please head over to Dexcom.com for any more information about Dexcom CGM. And thanks for listening to Real Time, Real Talk, and we'll see you next time.